Chapter 12. My dear Mark, I have been dangerously ill for the past 2 weeks here, of congestive fever. Very grave fears were for a time entertained of my recovery, but happily the malady is gone, though leaving me very, very weak. I hope to be able to resume my journey in a week or so. I think I shall speak in the theater here, which is one of the finest establishments of the kind in America. The saints have been wonderfully kind to me. I could not have been better, or more tenderly nursed at home, God bless them. I am still exceedingly weak, can't write any more. Love to Joe and Dan, and all the rest. Write me at St. Louis. Always yours, Artemus Ward. If one could only have Mark Twain's letters in reply to these. But they have vanished, and are probably long since dust. A letter which he wrote to his mother assures us that he undertook to follow Ward's advice. He was not ready, however, for serious literary effort. The article, sent to the Mercury, was distinctly of the Comstock variety. It was accepted, but it apparently made no impression, and he did not follow it up. For one thing, he was just then too busy reporting the legislature at Carson City and responding to social demands. From having been a scarcely considered unit during the early days of his arrival in Carson, Mark Twain had attained a high degree of importance in the little Nevada capital. In the legislature he was a power, as correspondent for the Enterprise he was feared, and respected as well as admired. His humor, his satire, and his fearlessness were dreaded weapons. Also, he was of extraordinary popularity. Orion's wife, with her little daughter, Jenny, had come out from the States. The governor of Nevada had no household in Carson City, and was generally absent. Orion Clemens reigned in his stead, and indeed was usually addressed as Overnor Clemens. His home became the social center of the capital, and his brilliant brother its chief ornament. From the roughest of miners of a year before, he had become, once more, almost a dandy in dress, and no occasion was complete without him. When the two houses of the legislature assembled, in January, 1864, a burlesque third house was organized, and proposed to hold a session, as a church benefit. After very brief consideration, it was decided to select Mark Twain to preside at this third house assembly under the title of Overnor, and a letter of invitation was addressed to him. His reply to it follows. To S. Pixley and G. A. Sears, Trustees. Carson City, January 23, 1864. Gentlemen, certainly. If the public can find anything in a grave state paper worth paying a dollar for, I am willing that they should pay that amount, or any other, and although I am not a very moldy Christian myself, I take an absorbing interest in religious affairs, and would willingly inflict my annual message upon the church itself, if it might derive benefit thereby. You can charge what you please. I promise the public no amusement, but I do promise a reasonable amount of instruction. I am responsible to the third house only, and I hope to be permitted to make it exceedingly warm for that body, without caring whether the sympathies of the public and the church be enlisted in their favor and against myself or not. Respectfully, Mark Twain. There is a quality in this letter more suggestive of the later Mark Twain than anything that has preceded it. His third house address, unfortunately, has not been preserved, but those who heard it regarded it as a classic. It probably abounded in humor of the frontier sort, unsparing ridicule of the governor, the legislature, and individual citizens. It was all taken in good part, of course, and as a recognition of his success he received a gold watch, with the case properly inscribed to the governor of the third house. This was really his first public appearance in a field in which he was destined to achieve very great fame. V. Letters 1864-66. San Francisco and Hawaii, life on the Comstock, came to an end for Mark Twain in May, 1864. It was the time of the Flour Sack Sanitary Fund, the story of which he has told in Roughing It. He does not, however, refer to the troubles which this special fund brought upon himself. Coming into the Enterprise office one night, after a gay day of uncelebration, Clemens wrote, for next day's paper, a paragraph intended to be merely playful, but which proved highly offending to certain ladies concerned with the flour sack enterprise. No files of the paper exist today, so we cannot judge of the quality of humor that stirred up trouble. The trouble, however, was genuine enough. Virginia's rival paper seized upon the chance to humiliate its enemy, and presently words were passed back and forth until nothing was left to write but a challenge. The story of this duel, which did not come off, has been quite fully told elsewhere, both by Mark Twain and the present writer, but the following letter, a revelation of his inner feelings in the matter of his offense, has never before been published. To Mrs. Cutler, in Carson City, Virginia, May 23, 1864. Mrs. W. K. Cutler. Madam, I address a lady in every sense of the term. Mrs. Clemens has informed me of everything that has occurred in Carson in connection with that unfortunate item of mine about the sanitary funds accruing from the ball, and from what I can understand, you are almost the only lady in your city who has understood the circumstances under which my fault was committed, or who has shown any disposition to be lenient with me. Had the note of the ladies been properly worded, I would have published an ample apology instantly, and possibly I might even have done so anyhow, had that note arrived at any other time, but it came at a moment when I was in the midst of what ought to have been a deadly quarrel with the publishers of the Union, and I could not come out and make public apologies to anyone at such a time. It is bad policy to do it even now, as challenges have already passed between myself and a proprietor of the Union, and the matter is still in abeyance. But I suppose I had better say a word or two to show the ladies that I did not willfully and maliciously do them a wrong. But my chief object, Mrs. Cutler, in writing you this note, and you will pardon the liberty I have taken, was to thank you very kindly and sincerely for the consideration you have shown me in this matter, and for your continued friendship for Molly, while others are disposed to withdraw theirs on account of a fault for which I alone am responsible. Very truly yours, Sam. 50. Clemens. The matter did not end with the failure of the duel. A very strict law had just been passed, making it a felony even to send or accept a challenge. Clemens, on the whole, rather tired of Virginia City and Carson, thought it a good time to go across the mountains to San Francisco. With Steve Gillis, a printer, of whom he was very fond, and an inveterate joker, who had been more than half responsible for the proposed duel, and was to have served as his second, he took the stage one morning, and in due time was in the California metropolis, at work on the morning call. Clemens had been several times in San Francisco, and loved the place. We have no letter of that summer, the first being dated several months after his arrival. He was still working on the call when it was written, and contributing literary articles to the Californian, of which Bret Harte, unknown to fame, was editor. Hart had his office just above the rooms of the call, and he and Clemens were good friends. San Francisco had a real literary group that, for a time at least, centered around the offices of the Golden Era. In a letter that follows, Clemens would seem to have scorned this publication, but he was a frequent contributor to it at one period. Joaquin Miller was of this band of literary pioneers. Also Prentice Mulford, Charles Warren Stoddard, Fitzhugh Ludlow, and Orpheus 100. Care. To Mrs. Jane Clemens and Mrs. Moffat, in St. Louis. September 25, 1864. My dear mother and sister, you can see by my picture that this superb climate agrees with me. And it ought, after living where I was never out of sight of snow peaks 24 hours during 3 years. Here we have neither snow nor cold weather, fires are never lighted, and yet summer clothes are never worn. You wear spring clothing the year round. Steve Gillis, who has been my comrade for 2 years, and who came down here with me, is to be married, in a week or two, to a very pretty girl worth $130,000 in her own right, and then I shall be alone again, until they build a house, which they will do shortly. We have been here only 4 months, yet we have changed our lodgings 5 times, and our hotel twice. We are very comfortably fixed where we are now, and have no fault to find with the rooms, or with the people. We are the only lodgers in a well-to-do private family, with one grown daughter and a piano in the parlor adjoining our room. But I need a change, and must move again. I have taken rooms further down the street. I shall stay in this little quiet street, because it is full of gardens and shrubbery, and there are none but dwelling houses in it. I am taking life easy now, and I mean to keep it up for a while. I don't work at night anymore. I told the all folks to pay me $25 a week, and let me work only in daylight. So I get up at 10 every morning, and quit work at 5 or 6 in the afternoon. You ask if I work for greenbacks? Hardly. What do you suppose I could do with greenbacks here? I have engaged to write for the new literary paper, The Californian, same pay I used to receive on the olden era, one article a week, $50 a month. I quit the RA, long ago. It wasn't high-toned enough. The Californian circulates among the highest class of the community, and is the best weekly literary paper in the United States, and I suppose I ought to know. I work as I always did, by fits and starts. I wrote 2 articles last night for the Californian, so that lets me out for 2 weeks. That would be about $75, in greenbacks, wouldn't it? Been down to San Jose, generally pronounced San Jose, emphasis on last syllable, today 50 miles from here, by railroad. Town of 6,000 inhabitants, buried in flowers and shrubbery. The climate is finer than ours here, because it is not so close to the ocean, and is protected from the winds by the coast range. I had an invitation today to go down on an excursion to San Luis Obispo, and from thence to the City of Mexico, to be gone 6 or 8 weeks, or possibly longer, but I could not accept, on account of my contract, to act as chief mourner or groomsman at Steve's wedding. I have triumphed. They refused me, and other reporters, some information at a branch of the coroner's office, Massey's undertaker establishment, a few weeks ago. I published the wickedest article on them I ever wrote in my life, and you can rest assured we got all the information we wanted after that. By the new census, San Francisco has a population of 130,000. They don't count the hordes of Chinamen. Ears aptly, Sam. I send a picture for Annie, and one for Andela, that is, if she will have it. Relations with the call ceased before the end of the year, though not in the manner described in Roughing It. Mark Twain loved to make fiction of his mishaps, and to show himself always in a bad light. As a matter of fact, he left the call with great willingness, and began immediately contributing a daily letter to the Enterprise, which brought him a satisfactory financial return. In the biographical sketch with which this volume opens, and more extendedly elsewhere, has been told the story of the trouble growing out of the Enterprise letters, and of Mark Twain's sojourn with James Gillis in the Tuolumne Hills. Also how, in the Frosty Hotel at Angel's Camp, he heard the frog anecdote that would become the cornerstone of his fame. There are no letters of this period, only some notebook entries. It is probable that he did not write home, believing, no doubt, that he had very little to say. For more than a year there is not a line that has survived. Yet it had been an important year. The Jumping Frog story, published in New York, had been reprinted east and west, and laughed over in at least 1 million homes. Fame had not come to him, but it was on the way. Yet his outlook seems not to have been a hopeful one. To Mrs. Jane Clemens and Mrs. Moffat, in St. Louis, San Francisco, January 20, 1866. My dear mother and sister, I do not know what to write. My life is so uneventful. I wish I was back there piloting up and down the river again. Verily, all is vanity and little worth save piloting. To think that, after writing many an article, a man might be excused for thinking tolerably good, those New York people should single out a villainous backwoods sketch to compliment me on. M. Smiley and his jumping frog, a squib which would never have been written, but to please Artemus Ward, and then it reached New York too late to appear in his book. But no matter. His book was a wretchedly poor one, generally speaking, and it could be no credit to either of us to appear between its covers. This paragraph is from the New York correspondence of the San Francisco Alta. Clipping pasted in. Mark Twain's story in the Saturday Press of November 18th, called Jim Smiley and His Jumping Frog, apostrophe has set all New York in a roar, and he may be said to have made his mark. I have been asked 50 times about it and its author, and the papers are copying it far and near. It is voted the best thing of the day. Cannot the Californian afford to keep Mark all to itself? It should not let him scintillate so widely without first being filtered through the California press. The New York publishing house of Carlton & Company gave the sketch to the Saturday Press when they found it was too late for the book. Though I am generally placed at the head of my breed of scribblers in this part of the country, the place properly belongs to Bret Hart, I think, though he denies it, along with the rest. He wants me to club a lot of old sketches together with a lot of his, and publish a book. I wouldn't do it, only he agrees to take all the trouble. But I want to know whether we are going to make anything out of it, first. However, he has written to a New York publisher, and if we are offered a bargain that will pay for a month's labor, we will go to work and prepare the volume for the press. Yours, Affy, Sam. Bret Hart and Clemens had by this time quit the Californian, expecting to contribute to Eastern periodicals. Clemens, however. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.